following podcast is a special edition of the Rito Roundup.
From the Horsefly Sanctuary at Swamp Hill Studios, located in beautiful Turtle River, Minnesota,
just east of the swamp,
and up the hill a bit, it's the Rito Roundup!
Hello, everybody. This is the Rito Roundup. I'm Reed Olson. Today is June 14th, 2023. Happy Flag Day, Rob. Yes, it is Flag Day. Really quick at the top of the show, I don't normally get political with these shows, so I'll do it right here and then move away from it. But I saw a Flag Day celebration, and they had the Gadsden flag at it, and they're like vets and stuff like that. And
what's the
The Gadsden flag is that yellow flag with the rattlesnake on it, and underneath the rattlesnake it says "Don't tread on me." And it was used in the Continental Army against the Brits by, I forget, it was at the South Carolina Marines or something like that. So there is a revolutionary history connection to it, but lately I see it as like people that don't want to have to pay taxes or people that are anti-government. The point of it initially was like saying to the British government, don't tread on me, you know, get out of here. We want freedom. And to wear that, to fly that flag now, you're pointing it now at your own government, saying that we don't want the government, you know. And when we kicked out the Brits, it wasn't government that we were kicking out, it was the Brits. And the wealthy people wanted to keep the taxes local and not have the taxes go to England, you know. So I don't know. It's always weird to hear myself make arguments in support of the US, like the federal government, because I don't know. It's just weird, but I just don't like that flag. I think to me, it's anti-community. It's anti-social, you know, that we come together. It's like, you don't want us to tread on you, but you're going to drive your truck home that has that Gadsden flag decal on it on our streets that we are all paying for. And you're going to send your kids to our schools that we are all paying for. And you're protected by a law enforcement that we all pay for. And it's an infrastructure that you benefit from that we all pay for. So don't tread on me is kind of a silly, it's like something a man child says that needs to just grow up and understand that whether we want to be or not, we're part of a greater system. You know, and we just are. We are part of our community. We have family members and neighbors and friends and people that we don't care about too much or we don't like. And we're all responsible for one another's welfare at the end of the day. You know, get over it. So whatever. Stupid flag, I think, now. Although I understand why they did it back then. That's done. All right. That's our show. Happy Flag Day. It was a special. It is a special episode today. I had said in our last podcast that we would come back and do a legislative wrap up, which we're going to get into in a moment. But we just want to talk quickly about some topical news. Yesterday, Trump was indicted on 37 counts, most of them relating to violations of the Espionage Act. And I know that this is a time when MSNBC and CNN and everybody that really hates Trump is doing this victory lap because we're charging him with, you know, I have huge issues with the Espionage Act. I don't know. I think it's a very blunt instrument that probably isn't really constitutional. It was invented, you know, Eugene Debs. We have Debs, Minnesota, off to our northwest, was named after Eugene Debs. He ran for president in, was it 1916, I believe, from a jail cell in prison for violating the Espionage Act because he spoke out against World War One and spoke out against the draft. And so they said that he was giving, what do they call it, like aid and succor or whatever to the enemy. And they imprisoned him for a couple of years, I think. So they're using that same thing against Trump. And they're using that against Assange. They use that against the communist couple that was, they were hanged, the Rosenbergs, the Rosens, right? They use it against Debs. So it doesn't have a really good track record of being used in pursuit of justice. It's usually used in pursuit of attacking one's enemies, you know. I'm not saying that what Trump did wasn't wrong or bad or dangerous. And where it is for him was showing people like military plans to invade Iran that did not have the clearance. I mean, that's really dangerous. And Mar-a-Lago is a den of spies. It literally is full of spies. For anyone that has a spy agency has someone planted at Mar-a-Lago. You know, it's incredibly porous. You know, that is really dangerous. But there are other tools we could use to punish a person that is not the Espionage Act. And I don't like it. I don't like the Espionage Act. And I wish that they would have found other ways to charge him. You know, I don't know. What do you think about it, Rob?
My take on it was all the obstruction of justice and the sort of when NARA? Was requesting that information back. He did everything he could to, you know, circumvent them and obstruct them and hide these documents, you know.
And I learned recently that he had been talking with his attorneys about just destroying the documents. So I think his hangup, if I can psychoanalyze someone that I've never met, it seemed it was just like the idea of them demanding something of him is what he couldn't get past. You know, that not giving in to someone else's demands was more important to him than keeping himself out of jail. Because a lot of the indictments, it reads like an absolute idiot. You know, he could have at any time he could have given over the documents. And you're right. It is the obstruction that ended up like, what was it? Something with Obama back in the night, not Obama, with Clinton back in the 90s where it was like, it's the cover up, stupid. Right. That was the Monica Lewinsky stuff where he started lying about things under oath that then got him into a bunch of trouble, you know, that then had nothing to do with the initial investigation. It then became the fact that he was obstructing justice and lying.
You know, one of the big talking points I hear people saying was, well, you know, Hillary and her, you know, this email servers and Biden, you know, he had these documents, you know, and all that. What's the difference in your mind between what Biden and Pence even had classified documents and what they're finding with Trump?
I think I don't know what the documents, you know, I don't really know what the documents were that Pence and Biden had. But the difference is the obstruction. As soon as they found out that they had them, and it was like it was benign neglect or ignorance of the, you know, ignoring the law that caused that. Not, I mean, they weren't showing the documents at dinner parties and, you know, trying to impress strangers, you know. They immediately alerted NARA. They brought in people onto their property and said, please, you know, sift through all our stuff and see if we have anything else. And some of it may have been something as simple, and I don't know, but like sometimes an itinerary becomes classified. Like I'm going to a meeting with the chairman of the Fed at 3:00, and then I'm having dinner tonight with some lobbyists or something like that, you know. And that itinerary can be classified because they don't want would-be assassins to know where he's going to be. So even though this document is 5 years old and it just said that I was having soup and salad, you know, with the chairman of the Fed at noon, then I find that in my belongings and it has classified over the top of it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is classified. This shouldn't be here, you know. And that's, it seems that with Pence and Biden, that it's more that kind of an offense.
I heard I can't remember what branch, but they described the sort of that proliferation of classified documents that get mixed in with, you know, personal effects and things like that. They call it spillage.
The menu of the CIA cafeteria is classified. You know, it would be illegal for you to have that in your home. You know, yeah. And then, so, of course, there's going to be spillage when everything is classified, you know.
But the difference is that Trump, you know, tried to hide that and tried to keep that and did everything he could, moving things around.
Right.
The conversations that he was having with his lawyers is pretty damning. Do you think he'll ever see jail time?
I really doubt it.
I heard if he does get jail time, it's going to be like you know, just you have to stay in Mar-a-Lago or something like that. You know,
like house arrest.
House
or something.
Arrest. Yeah, he's never going to see the inside of a jail cell.
What I heard someone offer as a solution if he is found guilty, because I mean technically he could go to jail for the rest of his life. You know, he's 70. What is he? He just had his birthday. Is he 78 or something? 77, 78. Is to let him be sentenced to, if it's house arrest or if it is prison, then after 5 days, the president pardons him. So now you have been found guilty. You've began your sentence. You know, you tasted that humiliation, and now for the good of the country, I'm going to pardon you. And then we're all going to move on.
So is there any law that says a felon can't run for president?
No, Eugene Debs ran from a prison cell, you know, and
he was convicted, and obviously
of sedition or whatever under the Espionage Act. Yeah, it's the same. I mean, it's the only difference is that Eugene Debs was a socialist that didn't have he had millions. He got 2 million votes back then. When how many were there? 80 million Americans or something? He got 2 million votes, you know, not nothing. But I mean, there is no chance whether he was in prison or not, he was not going to win the presidency, you know? So Trump could win from jail if enough people felt that it was political prosecution, you know, political, comeuppance or whatever, you know.
And then he could pardon himself.
Well, that's a theory, is that he would pardon himself as soon as he got elected. Yeah. Which would be its own constitutional crisis of someone basically giving them, it's having like the power of the king, you know, that you truly are then above the law, which is not, the intent was not for it to be used for, family and friends, you know. It was there to, like at the end of the Vietnam War, when there were so many kids up in Canada that were draft dodgers and stuff. Or Nixon, you know, it's the same thing. Again, actually the same era, right? Same president. You just pardon them and then move on. Was it?
And Ford pardoned Nixon, though.
Right. And the draft dodgers too, right?
Ford did?
Yeah. So that's where it's, I think, kind of how it's supposed to be used, you know, as a way to simmer down tensions and stuff like that, but to use it as a way, because basically what Trump did with it, when you look at that, D'Souza got busted for giving Trump an illegal contribution and break, or maybe it wasn't Trump, maybe it was to a PAC, but he did something wrong and it was a felony, you know, and it was campaign finance, you know, a felony, which is pretty, saying pretty, something pretty serious, because nobody gets charged on that stuff. And Trump pardons him, and Trump was the number one beneficiary of the ill-gotten money, you know, and he pardons Stone for lying, you know, for perjury. He was lying to protect the president, you know. I mean, that is not the purpose of the power, the pardon power, you know. It's not supposed to be so that you can be just upfront mafia, you know, with no penalties, you know. So I don't know, but I think that I don't think that it would be good for the country for him to go to prison for more than about 3 days, you know. And even then, I don't know. But then, I mean, then it's that balance between, do we have rule of law or not? You know, is it a two-tiered system or not? You know, and you know, so, and he did stuff that was so egregious, betting on the fact that nobody would have the stones to go after him. So it's like, he's making it awfully difficult to not prosecute him, you know. And at any moment, if he would have shown just a shred of humility, he could have avoided all this, you know. So do you know what time it is?
Is it really?
I'm pretty sure it is, Rob.
So soon?
Yep, it's right now.
Come on, you bunch of crowning sons of bitches! Haul me to jail!
Wow, what's he done this time?
Well, so like I said, we're going to do a legislative wrap up. So I'm kind of mashing Grossel Watch with legislative wrap up. And I'll just remind people that the number one accomplishment, I guess, of Grossel this legislative session was getting a DWI right up at the beginning of the session and then having that cloud over his head while he did really almost nothing in the session, except for putting forward the bill, or he jacketed a bill. I don't know if it even got a reading in committee, but he made it and got some news out of it where we could put together a panel to adjust the state boundaries and allow neighboring counties that abut the Dakotas to secede to the Dakotas. It's kind of crazy, but you know, his base loved it.
We started a GoFundMe for him. Yeah.
To get a U-Haul or what?
Yeah. To get a U-Haul. Awesome. And, I think we've got like just a couple bucks. So I don't know if that's just the word's not getting out or people just don't think it's worth
it. See the link in the description.
Yeah.
But so what I want to do is just hit some bullet points, and just talk very briefly about maybe not even get into the guts of the bills, but just the bills that were passed and whether or not, Grossel voted for them. And you'll see a theme. I guess I'll give the game away. I was trying to find something that passed that Grossel voted for, and it was really hard to find anything. And the one where both houses unanimously voted to create this program for veterans that are suffering with PTSD and are justice involved, kind of like a second chance program or something, a jail diversion program that sounds really awesome. And we should do that for everybody. But yeah, let's start with our vets. You know, everybody voted for that. And then there was, I think he voted for renaming a portion of whatever highway, the Prince Nelson Highway or whatever, because it runs by Prince's childhood home, or something. So those are two things that he did. Other than that, everything that I'm going to talk about today, he did not vote for. He voted against everything. There are two where he was a no-show on the votes that I found. And I'd be curious to know, because I know he wasn't in court because he had his lawyer go. So where was he on these important votes? You know, but I'll get to those in a second. So I'm just going to go through these and all these good things that you're going to hear the Republicans for the next 18 months whine about. Historic taxation and stuff like that, and North Korea style abortion laws and stuff. And it's all hyperbolic and sometimes just outright lies. A lot of times it's an exaggeration, but sometimes it's just outright lies. But here's what we have to remember. I mean, we made historic investments in Minnesota this year. You've heard me talk about the Minnesota Miracle in the past, and it's something I talked a lot about on the campaign trail. And really quickly, the Minnesota Miracle was a series of policies that were enacted in the early 70s that made education better funded. Post-secondary education was affordable. Huge investments in our infrastructure, and it's what created the environment we have today, where we have more Fortune 500 companies per capita than any other state. Businesses flocked here after this investment in our infrastructure and our investment in our people. Pawlenty and the Republicans undid most of the miracle in the early 2000s. And remember, he famously said in Minnesota, affordable college is not a right. Even though he benefited from that when that was the regime back in the 70s. And so largely what happened is we restored the Minnesota Miracle. That has the Republicans just in a dander, you know, it is just so they're so upset about it. And so they're trying to make things say like this is the most partisan session ever. No, we did amazing things. And maybe a couple of spots, some people could argue that the DFL overplayed their hand, but we brought back so here's some of the things that we did. Historic investments in Minnesota's shelter programs, like homeless shelter programs that have been underfunded for decades. Really great. He voted against that, even though he represents, you know, the poorest county in the state of Minnesota. And he knows that we have an acute housing shortage all across the district, whether it's Bemidji, Black Duck, Lake of the Woods County, everywhere. Tiny towns in Lake of the Woods like Williams are starving for more housing. we invested $2 billion in housing. He voted against it, right? He voted against the target of being having the state have 100% clean energy by 2040. You know, no, we shouldn't do, right? He voted against codifying abortion rights in Minnesota. And regardless of what he says next fall in debates, know that the second that he's in a majority, they will outlaw abortion. They will outlaw Planned Parenthood. They will outlaw reproductive rights in Minnesota. He voted against banning, this is kind of a double negative here. He voted against banning conversion therapy, you know, where people that are gay get sent by their folks or by their community or by their church to these, in quotes, psychologists or whatever that try to give them therapy to force them to be straight or whatever. It can be really damaging.
Like pray the gay away?
Kind of, yeah, yeah. He voted against the Crown Act, which says you can't fire someone because they have a different hair style than you, you know, that they have, you know, it's like hair from people of non-white ethnicities can't be fired because they have naturally kinky hair, you know. And I'll just say this is maybe a low blow, but I think it's novel that someone that is bald doesn't want to support people with hairstyles, with hair, you know, whatever. So that's a low blow. I'm sorry, Matt. I'm going to keep it above the driver's license for all. That's another thing that was normal for decades in Minnesota. And again, under plenty Republican-controlled legislature, they made it more difficult for foreigners to get driver's license. I remember when we had foreign exchange students, they were like 16, 17, they would take the driver's ed courses with us because I remember the German, you had to be 21 or 18 to get a driver's license. But if you got one from a foreign country and came in, you could then convert it. So it was a way for them to be able to drive earlier. And it was less expensive to get the certification here. And this it was an attack on undocumented immigrants to take that away. But it affected a lot more people than that. And so now we're going to have safer streets because everybody's going to be licensed, you know, and that's a good thing. It'll make it more easier for people to get their vehicles insured and they'll be driving legally, whatever is better. He voted against it, you know, expanding voting access. Now we have automatic registration for all of our citizens. He voted against that. Why? What? Because he knows that his policies are a minority view now, and the best way for them to stay in power is to disenfranchise more and more voters. The felon, giving felons the right to vote once they've served their time. And as someone who works with a lot of people that have felonies on their record, one of the biggest punishment, and this is people who have served like in prison for 2 or 3 years, and they come out and sometimes you're on probation for literally 30 or 40 years, depending on the judge, depending on the era when you got sentenced, you know. And they say the thing that was the hardest for me was not being able to vote, of having that right taken away from me. And having those rights restored will help people mentally integrate back into society, that maybe they're in the community, but they that is a barrier for them to feel like they're a part of the community again. And so I think that this will be a really good, it'll be interesting to see. We'll have stats. And what is did the recidivism rate in Minnesota go down when people with felonies on the record got the franchise? You know, that'll be interesting to see. So he voted against that. Free school lunches. Again, we're the poorest county in the state, and he votes against universal lunches. And there too, stigma, you know, and we see in studies in other states that have universal free lunches, one, the school district no longer having that administrative duty of means testing the school lunch program offsets the cost almost. So it's not that it even costs us that much more. We're no longer spending money on trying to segregate our students by class, you know. And then those kiddos that were free and reduced lunch eligible, they do better in school because they don't have to carry that stigma. I remember when I was a kid, there were two different colored lunch tickets, you know, so that everybody knew which one was the poor kid that had the free reduced lunch. So he voted against that. He voted against paid family leave. He voted against sick time. He voted against the farm bill. He's endorsed by the Farm Bureau. he votes against the farm bill. That was, again, historic, you know. So, and then there are two where he was a no vote. And I'm not saying that, like, a no show, I should say. I don't know where he was. I don't know why he was gone. And I imagine that there may be others. And I'm going to try and find that out, what other votes he missed. But one is maybe a smaller thing, but it's really big in the cities. And that's the catalytic converter theft, of trying to rein in on converter thefts. And if I'm not mistaken, it puts a little bit of responsibility on the recycling centers that are buying these, because they're buying them up, you know, and I think that it's sort of thing of like, you knew or should have known that these were stolen. So that's good. But he wasn't there for the vote. And then the big one, that he wasn't there for, and like, I think I've said on the podcast before, but I'll say it now. There's basically one job for a lawmaker, one main job. Everything else is optional, but you have to pass a budget. And you, part of how Minnesota does its budget is through bonding bills. And a bonding bill is where you can invest in these as an investor. They're called municipal bonds. So the state can go out and issue bonds to investors, right, at a percent. At a percentage rate. And right now it's probably, you know, 5.5%, 4%, at the low end, I would imagine. And, so this year was a historic bonding bill where we took out, the state of Minnesota took out $2.6 billion in bonds. And then traditionally what they do with those bonding dollars is they look around the state and they talk to municipalities and counties and tribes and townships. What do you got? You know, so this year there seems to be a theme, at least up here, of wastewater treatment facility upgrades and renovations and stuff. So he wasn't there for that vote. You know, he didn't vote against it. He didn't vote for it. I believe Steve Green, our senator, voted against it. It boggles the mind. So, and a little bit of history on the bonding bill this year. It passed the House with a few Republican votes, but I don't believe that Grossel voted for it in that initial vote. And then it went to the Senate, and in the Senate they need a 2/3 majority to pass a bonding bill, and they were balking. The Republicans were, because the Democrats needed the Republicans to come on board to get it through over the finish line, and so then they said, okay, you're not going to help us do a bonding bill. We're just going to do a cash only bill. And we're only going to invest in communities for the legislatures that are voting yes. And if y'all are going to vote no, then none of you are going to get any of the projects. And then they're like, oh, that's not fair. We're not going to vote for it, but still you have to send money to our districts. And they're like, no, we're not going to do that. So it's a 1.3 cash only, 1.3 billion cash only, no bonding. And then at the 11th hour, the Senate Republicans said, okay, if you include our projects, we'll vote for the bonding bill. And so it's an interesting dynamic where the Senate Republicans are the fiscal hawks, right? Saying, we're not going to vote for this unless you double it. You know, and instead of it being cash, we want it to be bonds. And that's not exactly, I mean, there's reasons for why it worked out that way. But on the face of it, it just kind of looks silly, because generally the Republicans are not the ones that are pushing up a bonding bill. They want to keep it small or limit the size of government. But here's some of the stuff. And last year they didn't get an agreement. They didn't pass anything, and they should have. So I'll just quick list off some of the communities in our area and the bonding dollars that they received through this. That, again, that Grossel did not vote for, because he wasn't there for the vote. He got one job to do. Central Lakes College down in Brainerd is getting $11.6 million. The city across Lake is getting $2.5 million for their National Loon Center. Camp Ripley is getting $5.7 million. Big Fork up north of here, their community center is getting $1.5 million for enhancements. Leech Lake Wellness Center over on Leech Lake, reservation, $24 million. Wow. Red Lake, that's going to be awesome. Red Lake Band of Chippewa got $3 million for their tribal college campus in Minneapolis. The city of Bagley got $7.2 million to make upgrades on their drinking water and sanitary system. City of Brainerd got $5 million for the wastewater. And so the rest of these are all wastewater. Clearbrook up north, that's where Grossel lives, got $5.5 million. And he wasn't there to vote for it. East Gull Lake, a little ways away from here, $2.9 million. Grand Rapids, $2.5 million. And Hackensack, $1.4 million, all for either water mains or wastewater treatment or something to do with water and sewer. So all of these good items, these good investments in the in our infrastructure in these smaller communities, and Grossel wasn't there to vote for it. Well, I'm going to quick say this. I forgot the other thing that Grossel didn't vote for was legal weed. He voted against legalizing marijuana. So all of these great programs, investments in small towns in their infrastructure that are going to last for decades, you know, they're going to improve the safety and health of the communities. And he wasn't there to support it. And so I'm going to dovetail a little bit here into the city of Bemidji. You know, did I say anything about Bemidji? No, I didn't mention Bemidji at all because they didn't make an ask. You know, the city council,
they didn't make an ask
to the state for bonding dollars. You know, you have to go to the state and say, hey, we want to do this. You know, give me some money. And some years they're like, well, maybe we have a chance. I mean, this year, $2.8 billion were handed out across the state.
Now, I remember when you were on the county board, you would have these lobbyists, or you would have, was it the lobbyists, or you would bring in, I think Grossel and Green, they would
right.
come in.
No, we'd bring in the electeds themselves.
Yeah. And they're saying, what
and
are
tell
you?
Tell them our priorities.
Yeah. Your priorities. Right. So, I mean, does the city do something similar to that?
I'm sure that they do. I don't know that they do. I don't know. We did a little bit when I remember doing that when I was on the city council. I don't know if they do now. I think that they were so busy during the legislative session. They were so busy trying to fire the city manager. And that's all that took all the oxygen out of the room. And they're just so dysfunctional. You know, they just can't make a decision. They're all afraid to make. I shouldn't say they are all. You can't find four people to make a decision. And they're constantly tabling issues like. The for decades they waive the water and sewer access charges for the Habitat for Humanity homes. So Habitat for Humanity finds vacant lots, they build homes to sell to low-income families. It's a great program. It infills inside the city. It gives home ownership to people that may otherwise struggle to gain home ownership. Wonderful for a community like ours. For decades, the city waives those charges. And they couldn't do it. They tabled it for a month because they weren't sure if they had the authority. And like, you didn't care when it came to firing Nate, you know, or other weird things that y'all do. Just waive the fees. It's like such a no-brainer. So there, everybody is so worried. Everybody is so distrustful and stuff that nobody can think. But I know that they're talking about a new city hall. I know they're talking about a new fire station, and this was the year. This was the year of giving from the state of Minnesota, you know, and we missed it. We missed the opportunity. And so now all those projects will still go forward. But instead of the state taking out the bonds to do these projects, it'll be the city and it'll be paid for through property taxes rather than getting it from the state where it's paid primarily through corporate taxes. You know, and other sources too, but you know, so yeah, I mean, talk about like there's just amongst the electeds, there just is no, there's no leadership. There's no, I don't know. It just seems like it's utter incompetence is what I see. And it breaks my heart because I know them all, you know, and they're, I mean, individually, nobody's, I don't know. I don't want to say it. I'm in such disagreement with so many of them, but I don't think that there are necessarily monsters on the council. It's just they don't know or don't care about what their fundamental role is as a city council member, as a mayor, you know,
and like, you don't have power. You know, you are part of a basically you're ruling by consensus, you know, and you only need a plurality, or you only need four, you know, so you don't have to get unanimity across all seven. But still, it's not any one person doing anything. It's a group of people deciding to move in this direction together. And that they just seem incapable of doing that. They're really great at postponing. So follow up on the city council tabled, if you recall last session or last podcast, the hiring of the consultant company and opening up the period again. And so
for the
selection firm to find a new city manager, they put out an RFP, which is a request for proposals, and they only got one response. And they thought that maybe, you know, Ron Johnson had said, well, I talked to someone from another firm and they said they would have applied if they had more time, but they didn't have time. So we should reopen it so we get more bids. And so they did that. And the company that had initially put their bid in pulled their bid because their bid became public knowledge. So then anyone, if they wanted to, could undercut it. And it just took all their competitive edge out of it for them.
Yeah. The city attorney kind of warned them that that might happen.
And she said, we may end up with no respondents then.
Is that what did anybody?
No, another company did. And what I understand is that they're more expensive and that's what they end up going with because now they really don't have any choice.
Well done, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, congratulations. Your tax dollars at work here with this brain trust. But the four, the block that runs everything, they're just Johnson, Peterson, Thayer, and George Prince, you know, they can't do anything. And like they're so excited about their power. Look at us, we're sticking together and we can do whatever we want, but they don't have the imagination or the guts to do anything. And they're running out of people to fire to scapegoat, you know? So I wish that they would just, you know, what do you say, lead follower, get out of the way, you know? So I don't know. I'm sorry, city council. I know it's a tough job and I just sit here in my armchair, you know, second guessing everything y'all do, but holy cow, you know, just waive the fees. My goodness. And get in on this. This is like every city is getting all this awesome stuff. Yeah. What do you got? You got anything to add there?
No, I don't think so.
There's one thing I wanted to say too, just as we're going, I noticed today, that the Bemidji Library is having an event on Friday. That would be the 16th. And it's in recognition of Pride Month and they're having some age appropriate story time and just kind of getting together community event, nothing crazy, nothing they haven't done in the past. And of course the haters are just freaking out and there's going to be protesters, outside the library and the event starts at 3:00. So if you hear this before the event, and you can get down there, go down there and lend your support to the library staff and go and attend the event. It'll be a good event and just show. And I guarantee you that the majority of the people that are going to be outside yelling at the library do not live in the city of Bemidji. They've come in from outside of the municipality. I bet the majority of them. So we need to show that we that live in Bemidji, and people from outside too, but you know, come in and lend your support and let's not let these nasty people bully us in our own community. You know, we should not feel afraid to be able to come together in fellowship. You know, I mean, it's only good that this is. It's not, there's not anything. And I'm so worried about this coming election cycle, about this weaponization of homophobia and trans, you know, it's so overblown. It's so scary. And it's, people are going to get hurt. People are getting hurt, you know, and it's just, I was trying to win the heart of a person on Facebook today by yelling at her somehow. And I wasn't yelling, but, we were disagreeing on the event and I probably shouldn't have said anything, but, I like said, you don't live here. Why are you posting on this Bemidji Library Facebook? Just worry about your own neighborhood. Worry about your neighbors and stuff. We're okay. You know, we're all right. We're fine. You don't have to come here. Just stay down in Park Rapids or whatever. And let's be, you know, let us be. So get down there if you can. And I love the library so much. I was on the board for the Kichigami Regional Library System for 6 years, and I was very proud to serve. And I know how dedicated our librarians are, and they don't need this. And the kids that are going to be there, and the adults, the families that are going to be there, don't need this. So thank you, everybody. As always, our music is brought to us by the Jake Baldwin Motif. I think that we had a good episode. I tried to keep it short, but I'm really long-winded, so.
And next pod, we're going to have a double beaver update.
A double beaver update. Wow. Two beavers for the price of one. You hear that, Fluffy? All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and enjoy the summer. We'll be back real soon. We love you.